This recording, Arkansas 41, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Comma Get Secure is copyright Douglas N. Onuroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Comma Get Secure. Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory, so she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area which was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Comma, Comma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her, but Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. "I can't imagine paying so much," but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. So, it was in the fall of 1992. My husband at the time and I decided that eventually we wanted to become parents. And I had been a person who had been on birth control pills at a very early age and lasted a long time, was on for years and years and years. And I always heard the stories about, well, you know, if you've been on those pills for a long time, then it's going to take a while for you to conceive. Well, I got off of the birth control pills in October and thinking, hey, we would have until 1993, late in 1993, before we would be telling the story of, hey, we're having a baby. Well, it happened so quick. In December of 1992, I was sharing information with both of our families by way of Christmas cards saying, grandmother this, or granddaddy this, or auntie this, or auntie this, great aunt this, to let them know we're pregnant. Now, this was a shock when I went to the doctor. The doctor was like, "You don't seem happy." And I was like, "No, I'm not happy," because he told me that my due date was going to be August the 17th, 1993, which was the anniversary of me and my husband's wedding. So, oh my gosh, got to thinking that there was so much going on at that time in the month of August. August the 9th was my grandmother's birthday. August the 22nd, my birthday and my sister's birthday, and we're not twins. August the 30th was my husband's birthday, and then our anniversary was August the 17th. Not another thing needed to be in the month of August. So I was distraught and, you know, upset about that fact, but then I eventually got over it and moved forward with the pregnancy. Now, the pregnancy did become troubled at some point in time because I developed something called eclampsia, which is a life or death situation. But with all of that in the mix, my father ended up suffering a cerebral hemorrhage in June 1993. And so old people always say when one life ends, another comes into the picture. But he didn't die at that point in time. And so he was on a coma scale, very low. I was pregnant at the time, dealing with my illness and all that kind of stuff. And then here he is, flat on his back, in a coma for 21 days, going through what he needed to go through to try to get well. I'm going back and forth to the hospital in Little Rock because they moved him to Little Rock. My doctor has me in the hospital here in Conway. And it was just so much going on in our family. My dad had often said that he wouldn't live to see his granddaughter. He knew he was pregnant, but he said, I probably won't live to see her grow up. And so that weighed heavily, you know, willing him to live. He did get a chance to see her, but we don't know how much he remembers of her. She was born July the 2nd, 1993, right when he was in the hospital. So my doctor had a, you know, she, you know, I was supposed to deliver in Conway, but I got in trouble. And so she moved me to the same hospital that he was in so that my mom didn't have to go back and forth. And we could be in the same spot. And my baby had to be in the hospital for 2 weeks. Now, we did get a chance to let her go in, and we have photos with him looking at her, or we thought he was looking at her, because he never really came out of that comatose state. He lived. You know, he would sleep, he would wake up, and he lived until March the 9th, 1994. And then he said goodbye. And so that's why my story is the beginning and the end, because, you know, I was a troubled pregnancy and the doctor was getting us to make decisions about, well, you know, we have to say if we have to, you know, we will save the mother instead of the daughter, the child, because the mom, you know, can have other children. And I was like, oh, my God, no. And so I feel like we just, you know, my dad was kind of moving out of the way so that she could be here. The end.